This is Nachyomi, Sefer Melachim Bet, chapter 18. Chizkiyahu, son of Ahaz, rules the kingdom of Yehuda and surpasses any of his predecessors or successors in his singular devotion to Hashem. Not only does he trust Hashem and observe the Torah, ridding the land of all idolatry, he takes the remarkable step of dismantling and eliminating the illegal private altars and sanctuaries, or bamot, that had been allowed to proliferate in the kingdom for generations. Chizkiyahu destroys what he calls Nehushtan, in a derisive, negative, pejorative way, which was the copper snake that Moshe Rabbeinu had fashioned as part of a miraculous cure for snake bites in the wilderness. It had become a fetish object and been worshipped by many members of the community, so Chizkiyahu took this initiative to eliminate it. Chizkiyahu succeeds in all his endeavors, subjugating the Pelishtim and refusing to subordinate himself to Assyria like his father had. 8 years after the exile of the northern kingdom, Sanherib, the king of Ashur, or Assyria, lays siege to the fortified cities of Yehuda, conquering and decimating them. Chizkiyahu apologizes for his defiance and expresses his willingness to pay a large tribute in order to persuade the Assyrian king to halt his siege. Sanherib demands an exorbitant sum from Chizkiyahu, forcing him to empty his own treasury and that of the temple, as well as to remove the gold with which he himself had overlaid the doors of the Beit HaMikdash to beautify it. Nevertheless, Sanherib soon sends an enormous army to Jerusalem, led by three of his officers, Tartan, Rav Saris, and Rav Shakeh, in front of all the citizens assembled by the wall of the city, as well as Chizkiyahu's own three representatives, Eliakim, Shevna, and Yoach. Rav Shakeh proceeds to dress down Chizkiyahu, demanding that he submit to the great king of Assyria. Rav Shakeh criticizes the Jewish king for his reliance on the support of the weak and ineffective king of Egypt. Moreover, he mocks Chizkiyahu's trust in Hashem, pointing out to the people that Chizkiyahu himself dismantled all of the individual altars devoted to Hashem, and surely could not expect Hashem to be of assistance now. Fearing that the Jews would be terrified by his message, the officers of Chizkiyahu ask Rav Shakeh to speak in Aramaic rather than in Hebrew. However, he brazenly insists on continuing in Hebrew so the people will hear his words and be intimidated and demoralized by them. Rav Shakeh addresses himself directly to the subject of Chizkiyahu, urging them to submit to the great king of Assyria, who will relocate them to a bountiful land like their own and will provide them with a peaceful and prosperous existence. He warns them against trusting in Hashem their God, reminding them that none of the gods of the nations were able to protect their devotees from the mighty Assyrian king. In accordance with Chizkiyahu's orders, no one responded to the speech of Rav Shakeh. The officers of Chizkiyahu tear their garments in mourning over the blasphemous words they have heard and report them to their king. The chapter leaves us in suspense, as the crisis has not yet been resolved. This chapter highlights the quality of Chizkiyahu that enabled him to demonstrate outstanding leadership, namely his trust in Hashem. Prior kings of Yehuda had exhibited piety and devotion to Hashem and had battled idolatry. Many of them deferred to the guidance of the prophets and invested wholeheartedly in the upkeep and improvement of the Beit HaMikdash. None, however, is described as trusting in Hashem with all of his heart. The fact that Chizkiyahu found his security in his relationship with the Almighty emboldened him to pursue unpopular courses of action, such as dismantling the private altars that previous monarchs were afraid to openly oppose. It is this very characteristic of trust in Hashem that Rav Shakeh ridicules in his monologue, suggesting that the king was famous for it. Indeed, Rav Shakeh attempts to capitalize on the controversial initiatives of Chizkiyahu in order to weaken his base of support, drawing attention to the destruction of the Bamot in particular. This substantiates our general assumption that taking down the local and private sanctuaries was a courageous, difficult, and highly unpopular move by the king. Chizkiyahu's remarkable ability to face resistance and implement this policy stemmed from his reliance on the Almighty and not on public opinion. In essence, the confrontation with Ashur was the ultimate test of Chizkiyahu's reforms. Until now, the citizens of Yehuda have stood behind their monarch and followed his direction, believing that his unflinching commitment to God will bring them salvation and prosperity. Recent events, especially the devastating military losses to Ashur throughout the kingdom, in which 46 highly fortified cities were defeated, and the lengthy siege now on Jerusalem, may have caused the community to doubt its resolute support for the radically new approach of their king. Rav Shakeh throws down the proverbial gauntlet, casting this conflict in theological terms as a confrontation between the king of Assyria and the God of Israel. And the officers of Chizkiyahu recognize that he is right. If Jerusalem should fall to Sanherib, then the consequence will be a colossal desecration of Hashem's name, and the erroneous conclusion that Chizkiyahu's religious initiatives, rather than improving the state of the kingdom, were at best misguided and at worst disastrous. They may have even believed that it was Chizkiyahu's reforms that led to the downfall of Jerusalem. And we end with this cliffhanger that will be resolved in the next chapter.